This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Shannon Dreher. And so, Shannon, of course, the winter meetings are starting, and more trades might be in the works. But as you look back and see how these five trades have worked and the seven guys, I guess, that are gone from last year's team, how do you look back at how this has gone and where it's all heading?
Well, I think the biggest thing is it's all happened so quickly and decisively. And for me, I think there's been a lot of shock, both with fans and people around the game, that the Mariners tore it down as much as they did. But I think that on the good side of that is they're no longer in between, or they're setting themselves up to get out of that in-between area in what they were trying to do. They're not going halfway with anything. And I think that that is something that kind of put them in the spot that they were in. They kept adding pieces to a core that they belonged in or believed in for a long time. But, when you're trading all of your prospects from your system to add things to something, and all of a sudden you look up and the teams around you have turned into super teams, and it's taking not 89 or 90 games to get wins to get into the postseason, but 97. I think it's really good that they were able to take that step back, make that evaluation that, you know what, we don't think this is something that we can fix in 1 year. We want to build something that can sustain. We're going to take the hit, we're going to take the step back, and we're going to build this up in a different direction, a more younger direction that should set them up well for years to come if it all works out. And of course, there is huge risk in that, but that's where they're at right now. So I think one of the more stunning things is that now that you see all the players that have been moved, you take a look at where they are with their prospects, and their prospect list all of a sudden looks very different than it did even a month ago. And that's important. You know, there was going to have to be a reckoning with what was going on with the farm system. And I think that they were able to make great strides with that pretty quickly. I was listening to a podcast, a Baseball America podcast, with Ben Babler and Bill Mitchell, who watches the Mariners prospects on a regular basis. And he likes what he sees. He believes it's something that they can build around. He believes in a lot of the prospects that they have picked up, and likes the return that Jerry DePoto was able to get for some of the older veterans on the team, or some of the younger players who weren't going to be around in 3-4 years, whose contracts were going to expire. So very dramatic what he has done. I'm very interested to see how this all comes together. And, you know, hopefully what you ideally want to see is things start to happen in the second half of next year. You know, obviously playoff push is not going to be something that I think or anybody would think is in other than the players. I saw Marco Gonzalez yesterday and said, just tell us no. He said, just tell us no. We're not going to go in there and say, oh, we're going to lose this many games. Tell us no. We'll have a chip on our shoulder and see what we can do if that's what you want to hear from your players. But realistically, they've got a challenge ahead of them. But when they do all kind of get on the right path and start moving in the right direction, it's going to be interesting to see. It could be fun to see. I like prospects. I like seeing young players come up and stick with the team. And maybe there's a superstar in there you don't know. But it's going to be a very different look from what we have seen over, you know, many, many years with this team, where it's been, well, this prospect might be okay, but we're really going to add by a free agency. We're going to spend some big dollars, and some of those players didn't work out. So I'm excited to see how this turns out for the team. It's going to be tough the first couple of years, but we'll go from there.
Yeah, and of course, Jerry DePoto, I think in the last couple of days, kind of thought this took this into a top 10 type of farm system. I kind of look at it more top 20, but on the rise, no question about it. And maybe as high as 15. But clearly, I mean, a tier one prospect in Sheffield, a bunch of tier two prospects are a top 100. And again, there's still going to be more needs and more acquisitions in that. So again, I guess the timetable is 2020, 2021, right?
I think it is, but John, when you look at the list and who they've brought in, I kind of put it all out in front of me and did little charts and have it up on a blog post of, you know, what was their top 10 prospect list in 2016, 17, 18? What was it at the end of the season this year, and what has it turned into? And if you look at that list, you see your first top six players on the top 10 list, and this is MLB Pipeline. There's a whole bunch of different, but they're all kind of in the same ballpark. The top six are all first-round picks, and that is significant. That's not anything that you had anything close to before. Your seventh is one of the highest-rated international signees. Yes, he's 17. It'd take a little while to get here, but you've got real talent there. And you've bumped some players, minor league players that kind of profile to be somewhat useful and can help at the big league. You bumped them out of the top 10, whereas before they would be in the top 10 and you would have some others that you would have no idea are who are almost borderline or, some actually who were like a year or two away from being minor league free agents because they hadn't made it yet. So the list looks very different for them right now. And I think that that is just such an encouraging thing for the organization because that sets up better for the long-term health.
Yeah, I know that that's one thing that I do kind of like about that because, again, at least you can see there's a plan there. And, again, I mean, Jerry DePoto, I think because he's made so many trades, you kind of get the pattern, and he likes first-round picks. I mean, Marco Gonzalez being one that fought injuries and all that but was one of the top in the organization and did it. Now, the one I think is real interesting because it's taken some criticism, which is probably a little crazy because he's only 23, is J.P. Crawford because, I mean, on the prospects list, I mean, he was one of the best for like 4 years in the Phillies organization, has come up and struggled a little bit at the shortstop, but he's only 23.
Yeah, and he had a rough go of it his first time up because he was dealing with a bunch of injuries. And as tough as injuries are, if you get them, in any season in your career, it's hardest when you are trying to launch that career at the big league level. So we'll see. I think that a fresh start will help with him. I think there's a decent chance they start him at AAA, too. I'm not convinced he's going to be on the opening day roster, so they go back and, they give him the opportunity to build up a little bit. And Mariners have just hired, who is a guy who's considered to be one of the best infield coaches in the major leagues, in Perry Hill. He's the one who helped D. Gordon make the transfer from shortstop to second base and helped turn him into a gold glove at second base. So, when he does get to the big league level, I think that help will be there on the defensive end where there's been a little bit of a knock for him and there looks to be some room for improvement. And then, of course, the hitting numbers you saw last year, not all prospects come up and hit right off the bat. It doesn't always happen. Sometimes a lot of guys go up and down and then don't stick the first time. So we'll see what there is there. It's going to be interesting to see. I don't have a feel for if he was an actual target in a trade or if they were just looking to fill a spot and liked what they saw and the potential in him. So he's one that I really, I think you're right. I think that he is somebody that we really don't know. I don't think he's as sure as, not that any prospect is sure, but he doesn't have the shine that a Kalanick or a Sheffield has on them right now. And I think we'll be a little bit more of a developmental project, but I do think that there are some things in his past and as far as coming up and having the struggle that you can kind of point to, well, I can see where it might have been a little bit tough for you because of this, and this, but I think fresh start is something that's going to help him out.
Now, if this were like 3 years ago and they had acquired Jay Bruce, I mean, I think there would be a big celebration because, I mean, Jay Bruce was such a good player. But at 31, what's happened to Jay Bruce that, he drops down? He was playing at $13 million a year. He was a real good hitter. But then something happened in the last couple of years that he's dropped off into the 228 range. But can he get stuff back from what you're hearing?
Well, like J.P. Crawford, he was dealing with injuries last year, and I think that that had something to do with it. And I think also, it's funny, I just talked about how tough it can be that if you're just coming up for the first time and you have a rough go of it. I think that Jay Bruce was traded and had a rough go of it from the start and really never got on track last year, and then injuries played into that too. So we had an opportunity to talk to him after the trade, and he also kind of gave me the impression that he's one of those guys who at 31, 32, he's starting to realize that you do have to do things differently as you get older. And I asked him about his workout routine and how he gets ready now, and he said that he has made significant changes with that. But he told us he was healthy right now. He sounded relieved to be getting out of New York. That is a tough place to struggle. But I think that, you know, my best guess would be that injuries were the biggest thing that played into his downturn last year.
How do you think they're going to use Carlos Santana?
Well, the first question is he going to be on the roster? If
yeah,
he's on
sure.
the roster, I think he's going to be your first baseman DH type, along with another first baseman DH type. I think there's going to be a lot of back and forth between those positions. I think that you've got too many of those right now. I think that they are open to trading Santana. I think they're open to trading Ryan Healy right now. In fact, I've heard there have been some discussions here and there with him. I think it depends on what the rest of the team looks like and if Santana is on the team. But this is a guy that, you know, like Bruce, when he is right, will definitely have some value. I don't think there are any guarantees you see either finish the year with the team because, again, they don't really fit into that. Are they going to be good to go 2 years from now when the Mariners are starting to take off? But it's funny because when we had the conference calls, he was not on that conference call. So I kind of almost automatically was thinking, okay, maybe he is not going to be one of the players that we see in spring training. And the teammate that he was traded over with could not say enough good things about him and that he was looking forward Crawford was looking forward to having Santana over at first base. And so he comes with a great reputation for being an absolutely great teammate, a leader type, a Nelson Cruz type is what one person said. So I was kind of hoping that we would see him. He's also a switch hitter, and the Mariners are very lefty hitting right now. So he's something that would be of use in the lineup, no doubt, because he has that flexibility. But I don't know if we're going to see him or not.
Yeah, and then, of course, the other one to look at is Anthony Swarzak, the relief pitcher who makes $8 million. What kind of role would he have?
Right now, there are absolutely no roles in the bullpen. You barely have a bullpen right now, mm-hmm. so it's just far too soon to say where anybody is going to slot in. Obviously, a veteran who is coming off of a down year, and they'll use him wherever he looks best at the time. He's another one of those players that you're hoping for that bounce back with, because if you do have that bounce back, he'd be a trade candidate at the deadline.
And then, of course, now they're still with the possibility. What are now some of the needs that Jerry still has to fill?
Pitching, and more pitching.
Mm-hmm.
The bullpen is, you know, absolutely, there's not much left standing there right now, to the point where DePoto himself admitted that when he goes to the meetings that start tomorrow or start Monday, that's going to be a focus. They need to get some help for that bullpen. I think that is the biggest thing. I think they probably need to look at a veteran shortstop if they are thinking about perhaps not having Crawford start at the big league level. I don't believe they have anybody that they can start there right now. So on an everyday basis. So I think that they'll need help there. They're probably going to need, well, they'll definitely need to at least bring in some catchers for spring training, but who are they going to pair with Nevirez? If during the season, I don't think he's going to catch 162. Does that go to Freitas, or do they bring in another veteran to try and split duties there? I think that there are definitely some needs at that position as well.
Oh, no question about it. And, of course, I still wonder about a power-hitting left fielder. Is that still a need, or can they get by without that?
I think that's Jay Bruce right now.
Okay.
If he's on the roster, I think that is Jay Bruce. Obviously not the best glove out there, but, you know, this year isn't about having everything perfect. This year is about, you know, getting those young players up, getting them playing, and starting to set a foundation. I look at it as more of a 2-year plan where it would be really nice to have this year, but you can probably afford to wait until next year to get that when you absolutely need to get it.
Well, it's going to be interesting, and I would imagine that you just have. You know, I mean, it's almost like you're just like constantly going to be on call here because you don't know if it's going to be a flurry like it was for a 4 or 5 day period, or it's going to be a little bit of a long one. But all you know is there going to be more deals.
Yeah, but I do think that the most dramatic deals have been done. You know, there's a possibility that they could make another big trade, but my feeling on Mitch Haniger is they are going to hold on to him unless they are absolutely blown away by a deal. I don't think that they want to move him. So I think the heavy lifting, as Jerry DePoto likes to say, has been done. But, yeah, there are still spots that need to be filled, so we could see some things. And you know, I would be shocked, John, that if at some point of this offseason we didn't see somebody that he has traded for traded. I think he will come back around and start trading some of those guys too.
It's a wild one, but stay tuned. Hey, Shannon, thanks for joining us.
Anytime, John.
That's Shannon Dreher. You, of course, read her on 710sports.com. Listen to her all through the Mariners as we get ready for a very busy, and right in the middle of a busy offseason. All right, let's load up the phone lines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Brian in Seattle. Hey, Brian.
Hey, John. How's it going, bud?
Good. How are you?
Good, thanks. So I'm a Cowboys fan, unfortunately, living in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
Question on what do you think? Do you think the Cowboys are going to win the East? And then how do you think Dak is playing overall?
I think they will. But here's the thing I'm still concerned about is that, I think they can win it with 9 and maybe get to 10. You know, this game's going to be the critical one against Philadelphia, because all of a sudden, if they lose to Philly, then I think will get hot and then take the division. So this, much like the Seahawks and the wild card, this game is the vital one. They've got to beat Philly and beat them down. If they do, they win the division, because Washington, they're going to fade because of the injuries at quarterback, wide receiver, you name it, offensive line. So that's going to knock them down. And I think what it comes down to is that, they just got to try to, get this win, and that they'll put them at 8. That'll put them in a good spot, and I think that they'll win the division. But and as far as Dak, I think he's played decent, but he has to play a certain way. His comeback ability is not that great. He has to play a running type of game, more of a lower scoring type of game. And if it gets to the point, like, for example, against Philly, that Philly gets up 10, 14 points, then I think they're going to have a tough time winning that game. So they have to play a certain game. They've got to manage it so they can run the ball, take some pressure off, and not have to rely too much on the pass.
Yeah, do you think, I've been kind of hard on Dak, and it's funny, I realized last week he only had 4 incompletions, but we all focused on the deep ball that he missed to Gallup. But he has shown, like in the Packers game in the playoffs, I think he had 300 and something yards, 3 TDs. Was that more of just an aberration, and he can't be that player? Or do you think he is that guy who can just have to keep it a low scoring game, he'll make some plays with his feet, a few big plays with his arm, but he's not going to be the 275-yard, 300-yard passer?
Yeah, I think that's the case right now. That doesn't mean he can't evolve. And again, some of it you still have to credit to the pull down on his numbers to the inferior receiving core. I mean, last year he had no speed at the receiver position, none. There was no separation. I mean, now the only guy that can really separate is Amari Cooper, and so that's opened some things up. So if they get better at the receiving core, then I think he can put up better numbers, because he's not he's good right now, but he's not great. I mean, he can't throw into completions. That's one thing that I think is not there. But again, and his ability to throw in tight windows is not as good as it needs to be yet. But I still think he's a good quarterback. I mean, the one thing, he's a winning quarterback. He's been a playoff quarterback. At this stage right now, he's a playoff quarterback, much I think like Alex Smith. He can get you there, but how far deep can he get you? That doesn't mean he can't get better. So he's good, but he's not great.
And last question, what would you estimate his contract is going to be?
I'd say 25 mil. I don't think there's any way that they can get out too cheap on that. I mean, it's got to be between 22 and 25 mil. It doesn't have to be the 28 mil. But one thing, Jerry's going to pay it because he likes him as a quarterback. He's good enough to be able to earn that. So I'd say 25 mil.
Gotcha. All right, John. I appreciate it, bud. Thank you.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Get the most Seahawks coverage all season long on 710 ESPN Seattle. Brock and Salk sit down with Pete Carroll every Monday at 9:30. Player interviews from the locker room with John Clayton Mondays at 10:15. Bob, Roz, and Tom broadcast from Seahawks headquarters for the huddle every Thursday at noon. Danny, Dave, and Moore talk to a different Seahawk every afternoon at 5. Your Seahawk headquarters all day long. 710 ESPN Seattle.
Got a car lover on your shopping list? Be a holiday hero and burn rubber to Griot's Garage for premium car wash products, car care accessories, quality hand tools, and garage gear. You can also give a gift certificate for that particular perfectionist on your list. Griot's Garage is conveniently located on South 38th Street and Union in Tacoma. For more details, go to griotsgarage.com. That's GRIOTS garage.com.
John Clayton here for Bellevue Rare Coins. Food, gifts, traveling, there's seemingly no end to the added expenses the holidays can bring. Luckily, my good friends at Bellevue Rare Coins can help. Take a look for old, unwanted, and even damaged valuables and bring them to your nearest Bellevue Rare Coins for a free, no-obligation evaluation. With the highest offered payouts, you can trust the GIA-accredited experts at Bellevue Rare Coins will get you the most for your items. Bellevue, West Seattle, Linwood, Issaquah, and now Tacoma. BellevueRareCoins.com.
Well, we all know how stressful the holiday season can be and how much that can impact your sleep. Whether you're running around to family gatherings, shopping, whatever it is, you got to have your energy. You got to have your sleep, and I've got it now thanks to Sleep Number. It's Bob Stelton here, and sleep has been elusive for me throughout my life, whether it's sleep apnea, bad back, but I have found something that has definitely helped me, and that is Sleep Number. Right now, my Sleep Number setting, by the way, is 85, and the beauty of that is I can alter that. You buy a traditional mattress, it is what it is. Too soft, too hard, it stays that way. Sleep Number, you can adjust it as often as you would like. Now, a lot of couples out there disagree on mattress firmness. Sleep Number beds let you choose your ideal firmness on each side, so it's just right for the both of you. And the new beds are so smart, they sense your every move and automatically adjust to you, keeping you sleeping comfortably throughout the night. So come in and see the newest Sleep Number 360 smart beds. This is not a bed, it's a brighter you for the holidays from $9.99. Sleep Number is the official sleep and wellness partner of the NFL. Visit one of the 9 Sleep Number stores in the Puget Sound area to get your better night's sleep today.
Hey, it's Tom Wassel. Join 710 ESPN Seattle and me this Monday for another Hornitos pregame party at Pyramid Brewery from 3 to 5 p.m. before the big Monday night football matchup. We'll be giving away prizes, swag, and enjoying Hornitos drink specials. If you haven't been to a Hornitos pregame party yet, we invite you to come by, say hi, and cheer on our home team. Pyramid Brewery's on First Avenue right across from Safeco Field. That's this Monday from 3 to 5 at Pyramid Brewery. Hope to see you there.
It's time to join the millions of people using Zoom video conferencing. Turn any size conference room, huddle room, or executive office into a Zoom room with flawless HD video, crystal clear audio, and instant wireless sharing. It'll even work with your existing hardware. Start your meetings with a single touch or use Zoom's new voice command feature. Hey Zoom, start meeting. Huddle happy. Visit Zoom.us to set up your free Zoom room trial today. That's Zoom.us. Zoom video conferencing.
At your independently owned and operated Papa John's, the double cheeseburger pizza is back. Get a large for just $13 delivered right to your door. Or stop by and carry out the double cheeseburger pizza for just $11. A local favorite with zesty burger sauce, a double portion of real beef, cheese, Roma tomatoes, and pickles for only $13 for a large. Order online at papajohns.com. Better ingredients, better pizza. Papa John's. Delivery fee and taxes extra.
$2 million is up for grabs with Run for the Money at Muckleshoot Casino. 3 ways to play. 1. Pick winning teams each week. If you're the season's best or worst record holder, you could win $1 million. 2. Swipe your Players Club card to earn free play. 3. Monthly drawing winners will win a share of over $25,000 in cash and prizes. Visit MuckleshootCasino.com for details. Muckleshoot Casino, the biggest and best in the Northwest.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Wow, big news out of New York. It looks like Odell Beckham Jr. Has a quad injury, suffered in practice, and so he's going to be out for this game coming up against the Washington Redskins. That's huge. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Patrick in Kent. Hey, Patrick.
Hey, good morning, John. How's
good morning.
It going? Doing all right. Just question about what you know. You talk about Seahawks winning 9 or 10 games. How about winning out?
They can do it. I mean, the first one. I mean, again, the luxury is if you can win the Minnesota game, the pressure's off, and they should be able to take care of San Francisco and Arizona. And hey, they do have Kansas City at home, so they can do that. It's one of those things where it's like I don't think you need to put the pedal to the metal on this one, because if you get to 10 wins, you're going to be in pretty good shape. And so for example, in a game like this is although you can't play DJ Fluker or KJ Wright, they're just not able to play. Maybe you have to push it a little bit on Doug Baldwin to get him out there, but when you get to the Kansas Kansas City game in Week 16, and if you're sitting there with 9 wins and an Arizona game that's going to be coming up in Week 17, I think you can say, okay, you try to manage it knowing that you want to try to get guys healthy for the playoffs. And so I think this is a real decision type of game, but this is one where if you want everybody that can play to play, this is where you push it. You need this win, but it's possible they could win out.
All right. Thank you very much, John.
All right. Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. I am fantastic, and as always, I will ever, forever wish both you and Mrs. Clayton the best of Saturdays.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. Pat appreciates that.
But, Mr. Clayton, you know, this is the season. It's Hanukkah and Christmas,
mm-hmm.
and it's the Army-Navy game.
That is true. No question.
It's always there. It always. I know it's December
mm-hmm.
when it's the Army Navy Hanukkah and Christmas, Mr. Clayton. It's the best.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And also, it's the awards for outstanding play and coaching. And how about this? Coach Kelly gets his third Coach of the Year award.
That's probably merited. I can see
no
that.
No other coach has done that in the history of NCAA football.
Mm-hmm.
I wish there were a few more championships under his portfolio. He does have two, you know, national championships in the other divisions.
Right.
And he's just trying. He's drooling over the possibility of getting another one in the big boys league.
Mm-hmm.
But Mr. Clayton, I know you'll love the direction we're going now. So who do you think might want him in the pros?
If he
decides to, you know, interview and et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I mean, I don't know the answer to this, but he's not an offensive play caller, is he?
No.
So then I don't think there's any chance.
He's become more of the
game man. I mean, yeah, CEO type.
CEO manager of the franchise.
Yeah, I'd say there's no chance.
Yeah, all right.
Because, what everybody's looking for is the offensive play caller. Now, again, if this were maybe 5-6 years ago, it might be a different story. And I still remember seeing him at the draft in New York City when they had the NFL draft in New York City. So I could see that he was snooping around, and I know that he was on the NFL radar. But the fact that he's not an offensive play caller, I think, takes him off the radar. And that's just, you know, not a criticism of him. It's just what is in demand right now.
Oh, no. And certainly, I think he's finally got himself in the groove at Notre Dame. His recruiting class for next year possibly may be the best he's ever had. And he's certainly done well with the kids he's recruited these last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Undefeated, another Coach of the Year award, and in the playoffs. And they better look out, those Clemson fellas, Mr. Clayton. I think the Irish just might pull a David and Goliath on them.
Well, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be a challenge. But remember, I mean, this is the first time. What we do, this is the first time they've had a playoff game in, what, 20 years or something like that?
Because playoffs have only been around, what, 4 years?
Yeah, true.
I know. So this is technically their first in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they did play Alabama in the national championship game in 2012, I believe it was,
and of course
got soundly beat. But since then, that just gave Kelly that loss, I believe, gave Kelly the roadmap to where he is today, a better understanding of recruiting and what he needs out of his coaches, staff, and stuff. He's hot, Mr. Clayton, and I hope and pray he stays at Notre Dame at least until he wins that national championship, which will make him basically one of the greatest coaches ever in college football.
Well, let's not go that
far.
We'll have won
three national championships, one in each division.
Yeah, that 4-8 season 2 years ago will really help him out on that one. I mean, he's one of the great, one of the greatest college coaches. Give me a break.
When the record stands at the end, and you look and you see he's won a national championship in each division, three divisions. He's been Coach of the Year 3 times, and maybe again, a fourth Coach of the Year.
Match that up against Nick Saban.
He's had two undefeated seasons, I think? Three undefeated seasons in his portfolio with teams he's coached?
No, not
no,
happening.
Mr. Clayton, that's
no.
outstanding.
What's that?
I said, no, that's outstanding. You got to, Mr. Clayton, you need to get on board with the Irish. You need to ride that glory train, Mr. Clayton.
Well, the train, we'll see if it stays on the tracks against Clemson.
Mr. Clayton, save your soul. Go Irish.
Thank you. 866-979-ESPN, one of the greatest college coaches ever. Come on. I mean, after one season where he's able to have a great one at 12-0, and he did some good things at Cincinnati, but let's not push that too far. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Hey, Rashid.
Hey, good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. Hey, Professor, I was wondering, and I actually even tweeted Bob Condotta the other day, what's going on with Earl Thomas? I mean, we haven't used our second IR, but even if he doesn't want to come back, I mean, he should have been with the team just like, I mean, for support. And I don't know, like, that's a bad look for him as a like player and a person. And And especially with the thick of things like in the playoffs, I actually don't like that. I think his attitude, he's a great player, but this attitude is like not good for a player of his stature.
No, but, you can see that he's bitter and that's not going to change. And, he's not going to be back. That's not going to change. And so I think that it's one of those unfortunate things that, you exit on a bad note and, you don't want to be with the team anymore. And so it's just a reality of where it is. And it's sad to say, but that's just part of the game right now. And so you just put up with it and see how it goes. But no, I mean, I'm not surprised. I mean, he's mad at management. He didn't think he was treated fairly because he didn't get the contract. He's the one to put him in that because he had a very wise holdout. I don't think that it obviously didn't help him. He went out and, of course, he suffers an injury that two years ago when he had it, he thought he would never be able to play again because it was going to take away his speed. So you just appreciate that's where he is, and that's just not going to change.
And so we don't know like where he is in his rehab or
it was going to take him probably until early spring to be able to come back and even start to do major things in football wise because again that's one it's like I don't know it's a 5-6 month injury so there was no way he was coming back this year to play.
Because as soon as he got injured there was a report that he might be able to be available in the Super Bowl but
there was no chance.
No, there's no chance. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there was absolutely no chance. Whoever put that report out was medically wrong.
Yeah, and Professor, we've seen this offensive explosion and everything, and I was doing some I was looking at the numbers,
mm-hmm.
and all these teams, and what people don't realize is that everything, all these misdirections and everything is, it stems from the fact that either you have a great runner or a threat to run and stuff. So unless you have an established run game or a big threat in the run game, you can't have these big numbers and stuff. And that's why I think Mike Zimmer is also upset that unless they do run a lot, their offensive scheme is just going to fall flat and stuff. And I think that's why Pete Carroll realized that if they're going to take the next step, unless they fix their running game, nothing's going to happen. So,
right.
So I think again he realized his deficiency, and all these people who think the running game is getting out of fashion and stuff—that's not true. Actually, if you don't have a running game, you don't have any offense. And look at Green Bay; that's another example.
Well, I mean, even look at Philadelphia. I mean, Philadelphia,
exactly.
I think, is the classic example. Jay Ajayi goes down with an injury. They don't have the consistent running game. They're scoring 22 to 21 points a game as opposed to 29 to 30. And so, no, I think that's where I think people keep missing the boat. I mean, you look at the Rams, and they've got the best running back in football in Todd Gurley. I mean, you look at when Kareem Hunt was with the Chiefs. I mean, they had the good running game. Look at the, they're double wealthy at the running back position with the New Orleans Saints. Running, I mean, you need good running because it gives you a little bit more balance. And, you look at the Vikings, and I think they're throwing the ball like 68% of the time, and so they have no balance. They get 86 yards out of the ground game, and they only get to 21 carries a game, and they're only getting 22.9 points. I mean, running the football is still important. Yeah, I mean, it's a passing league. There's more passing numbers than there's ever been, but don't neglect the running game.
Yeah, and so, Professor, finally, Can we get more hopeful about Mike Solari, because your friend Norvell, his team is not doing well, and do you think that might nudge Solari into the assistant coach of the year conversation?
Well, he should be in the conversation, because I think they've done the two best jobs of anybody. And so maybe that could give him an edge making the playoffs, and the fact that things have gone south. But I think they're the top two guys right now, Norv Turnbull, the offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers, and Mike Solari. And, you know, I don't know if winning out would change things. Maybe there's not a lot of people thinking about Mike Solari. But in my opinion, they're the two best candidates. And maybe with the win over Carolina and the fact that the Seahawks will probably make it and the Panthers probably won't, maybe that does give the edge to Solari.
Okay, great. Professor, you have a great weekend, and say hi to Patrick.
All right, hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Scott. Hey, Scott, how are you?
Hey, doing good. I have a fantasy question.
Okay.
Who should I play, Dante Pettis or Tre'Quan Smith this weekend?
Who's the second one you said?
Tre'Quan Smith from the Saints.
I think I'd probably go with Pettis. He's coming off a good game against Seattle. You know, and so I know they're playing Denver. Denver lost their best cornerback and Chris Harris. And so, you know, knowing that they're probably going to pass the ball, Matt Breida's not going to play the game. So they're going to be forced to throw more passes, because now they're down to Alfred Morris and guys like that. So I would say I'd go with Pettis. I mean, you watched him last week in the Seahawks game, and he looked pretty good.
Yeah, he played great. Thanks a lot, John. Have a great weekend.
All right, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines. Doug Farrar joining us at the top of the hour. Get in some in-depth football, breaking it down scientifically. But give us a call, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, looking forward to this weekend. And again, I'm off in a plane. I got to check to see how the weather conditions are going to be, at least trying to get to Kansas City. But really looking forward to this Kansas City-Baltimore game. You know, I know I just had the one stretch, which was just awesome. I was able to hit six games in 12 days. It was almost like a bucket list type of thing, and seeing some really, really good football. You know, and then, you know, the one weekend trip I took, you know, Chargers and Denver, that was excellent. And then, of course, being able to catch the Kansas City game against the Rams was just fantastic. So seeing good football, should see some good football tomorrow. But, again, your thoughts and, again, what you think the Seahawks do need to do to get this victory. How important is this game? Because I think you can see, you know, a win really puts them in a good spot. And the Vikings come in, you know, they have struggled against really good playoff teams. And now this is, I don't know if this is a good playoff team, but it looks like this is a playoff team, and it's on the road. Crowd noise should be a big factor. Probably going to be a little bit of rain. You know, it's going to be cold. This is an indoor team, but again, they play in Minnesota, so you know, it's not like they're afraid of the elements or anything of that nature. But give us your thoughts at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, interesting now that they had to go for Kelvin Benjamin. You know, Benjamin, of course, being the wide receiver cut, and really was terrible for the Buffalo Bills. Looked like he was out of shape. He struggled in just about everything that he was doing, and really has you know, the reason they signed him is that Sammy Watkins, the wide receiver, has a foot injury, and it could be a fifth metatarsal injury that pretty much could end his season. And so with that in mind, you know, that opens the door for, you know, Seattle to be in pretty good shape, or Kansas City to really kind of, you know, see where they're going to be with their offense and how good they can ultimately be. So those things are all on the cards. But again, give us a call, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jimmy in Seattle. Hey, Jimmy.
My question is about the Griffin brothers. You know, I remember from the first game that the one brother, the rookie, got benched, or not benched, but like wasn't the starter anymore. And so I just wondered how he's been doing, and how both of the others been doing, if you think they'll last on the Seahawks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's still a little bit of growing pains, but I think it's understandable for both. Now, in the case of Shaquem Griffin, he wasn't ready to be, I mean, he's doing very well on special teams, but he wasn't ready to take that step into the regular playing time, and so that may be more next year than this year. Shaquem Griffin, I think, has played pretty well, going through a little bit of a tough spot right now, missing some tackles and all that. So a little bit of a tough spot right now, but I think overall he's good. I mean, he's more in control. I know last week when we talked to Richard Sherman, he gave him great reviews, and so it's just a matter of kind of cleaning up a little bit of things. And if he does some good tackling, which is, again, he's a good tackler, he's also very good in coverage. I think both Griffins are kind of where they are. And in some ways, maybe you can say Shaquille has been a little bit more advanced than people think, because I think, you know, people saw he did good things last year, better things this year. He was able to start feeling more natural and getting picks. I think he's a good cornerback.
Do you think the rookie brother will be able to last in the NFL? Like, you know?
Oh, I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'll see why. I mean, you know, with the big thing, they're both good football players. And, you know, sometimes it's tough when you're coming up and you're trying to take over, you know, a very difficult situation as far as, you know, where it is, as far as how good the talent's going to be in the NFL. And, of course, I mean, some rookies can do it the first year, some can't. And, again, Shaquem is one that I think, you know, next year, I mean, he'll be competing for a starting job. We'll see if they bring Michael Kendricks back or K.J. Wright. Austin Calitro has done a good job. But overall, I think they feel pretty good about the whole situation.
Thank you so much, John.
Hey, thank you. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, Doug Farrar. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.